And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Today, I announce my endorsement for President of the United States. And I want to be clear, this is the most difficult endorsement I think I've ever had in my life. It's the most difficult vote I'm ever going to make in my life. On February 12th, the week after Super Tuesday, there will be the Potomac primary. And those of us in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan region will have our chance to choose D.C. votes, Virginia votes, and Maryland votes. And it was an interesting choice by the people in this area. I guess they figured Super Tuesday, no one would be able to watch all those states, New York and California and Illinois and 19 other states around the country. If we were to join with them, no one would come here. So we're a week later. We couldn't be earlier. We would lose our delegates, as happened in Michigan and Florida, or may still happen. We can talk about that later on. So I think it was actually a good choice. And I think, in fact, that our Potomac primary will still be important. I hope it is come February 12th. That time, I'm going to try my best to get the remaining candidates to come right here on the Inside Scoop. I don't know if I'll succeed or not, but I'd be happy to have any of the Democratic or Republican nominees remaining right here on the show. But as I said, it's been a very difficult choice for me, and I have to say that if I were only a voter and not a talk radio host, I'd probably wait a little longer. I would watch the Democratic debate that's coming up this Thursday. I would watch the results on Super Tuesday. I would see how the candidates responded. And then finally, I would make my choice, maybe just the night before the Potomac primary on February 12th. Ah, but I am not a regular voter. I am a talk show host. And I think it is important to state an endorsement, to say who you're voting for. If only so people understand what goes into my decision, it might affect their decision. And that can all be for the good. I should say, as I've said all along, I will fervently support the Democratic nominee in November. There's no question about that. That will be an easy, easy decision for me to make. Whether it is Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, both of them are leagues above a John McCain or Mitt Romney, or, God help us all, Mike Huckabee, or, yes, even Ron Paul. So who to choose? Well, again, I look back in my past, and I was thinking about my other choices for President of the United States. In 2004, I was a proud supporter of General Wesley Clark in the primary campaign against John Kerry and John Edwards. I thought that he could give the military muscle that America seemed to want. And yet he was truly a man of compassion. He was against the war in Iraq from the start. He had a lot of leadership experience. I still think very highly of Wes Clark, and I hope that our next Democratic president appoints him as Secretary of Defense. I chose him over John Kerry or John Edwards, but when the fall came, it was an easy choice to choose John Kerry over George W. Bush. Just because Kerry wasn't my first choice didn't mean I didn't see that he was leagues better than W. In 2000, it was Al Gore all the way. I supported Al Gore in the primary. I supported Al Gore in the general. I was ecstatic beyond belief when Al Gore won the presidency, and stunned beyond belief when the United States Supreme Court did not allow the American people to choose their leader under the Constitution. That decision still rankles me, will always rankle me, and still in my mind ranks as the darkest day in my lifetime in American history. We've had lots of tragedies since then, whether it be September 11th or Hurricane Katrina, where thousands have died, but still the Supreme Court decision in Bush v. Gore was the single greatest threat to our democracy in my lifetime, and hopefully we'll never see anything like that again. In 96, I proudly voted for Bill Clinton. In 92, I voted for Bill Clinton, the general. I do remember having a bit of a tough time in the primary. I think I pulled the lever for Paul Tsongas. I wasn't as politically involved then. I didn't really care that much at that time, I must admit. In 88, I supported Al Gore again. I've always liked Al Gore as a Tennessee boy, against Mike Dukakis, and then pulled the lever for Mike Dukakis against George Herbert Walker Bush. And in 1984, the first election in which I could make a choice, I proudly voted for Walter Mondale over Ronald Reagan, and though I was too young to vote in the primary, I do remember very much supporting Gary Hart over Walter Mondale. He was the man of new ideas at the time. But never have I had a more difficult decision than this year. And I'm proud to say it's not because I dislike the candidates equally. I've had those choices, too, where I dislike both candidates and have to pull the lever for the lesser of two evils. No, in my view, I will be pulling the lever for the greater of two goods. I have a lot of respect for Senator Obama. I have a lot of respect for Senator Clinton. I'm going to talk about them throughout this hour. Before I do, though, I do think a word needs to be said about Senator Edwards, who most of you know dropped out of the election today. Senator Edwards, I thought as a senator, was not that distinguished as the first senator of North Carolina. And I remember this one-term senator running for president in 2004. And as I said, at the time, I chose Wes Clark. I did like his speech about two Americas, and I thought that was a good one. But I didn't see that much more to Senator Edwards. In this campaign, I've seen a lot more to Senator Edwards, and it is no insult to him, because I think even more highly of Senator Obama and Senator Clinton, to say that I would have been very, very happy to have John Edwards be the next president of the United States. I like him better now than I did in 2004. He's really come into his own this election. He clearly is speaking out about a very important thing, about poverty in America, about those that are left out. I was moved when he described in his speech getting out of the race today of how he talked it over with some homeless people under a bridge. And I would like to think that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama would both find the time at some point to talk over their candidacies with homeless people under a bridge. I can say, though, that without disrespecting those two, John Edwards, I can see doing it far more than either of them. He always looked out for those that are left out in America. Unfortunately, those that are left out in America don't vote very often. Some of it is by their choice. Much of it is not by their choice. By laws that disenfranchise them, whether it be ex-felons from prison, whether it be the difficulty of registering to vote, whether it be the Help America Vote Act, which makes you come in with a picture ID the first time you vote. And lots of homeless people don't have driver's licenses or other picture IDs. I remember in Los Angeles, California, helping people vote in 1996, which I've done every election day. And I remember a homeless man walking in to the Democratic headquarters, and we tried to register him to vote. And it was within the deadlines. And his only address was under a bridge or an intersection. I don't remember the exact address. It was not a home. The man was homeless. And we called and we tried and we fought the registrar. And by the time we felt that we could maybe get him registered, well, it had been a couple hours and the man had left and we never saw him again. John Edwards looked out for the people who had no one to look out for them. And he's played a very positive role in this campaign. The most positive thing he's done, I think, is made sure that his issue, his primary issue, his main issue, will be heard by the Clinton and Obama campaigns. Whoever is the Democratic nominee will have John Edwards there by his or her side, not only supporting him or her, but also, again, reminding us as Democrats that it is our role to look out for those who have little voice in America. It is our role to look out for the poor and disenfranchised. If we don't look out for them, who will? So I want to thank John Edwards for running a very powerful, a very dignified campaign. I do think it was right that he get out now. I think on Super Tuesday it would have been unlikely, frankly, that he got first in any of the 22 states. If he couldn't get first in South Carolina, his home state, probably the only state that would give him first place would be North Carolina, and that primary is not for a while now. So I'm glad he's getting out, also because I don't want this to be a brokered convention. Whoever wins, whether it be Clinton or Obama, and as much as an analyst, I love the excitement of a brokered convention. I want to see one in the Republican Party. I want to see them fighting so hard between McCain and Huckabee and Romney that they all hate each other in the end. And that would be a great political excitement for me. And as someone who watches politics, I have to admit, part of me would be gleeful just to watch the battle between Clinton and Obama? And do you seat the Michigan and Florida delegates or don't you? And does John Edwards have enough delegates to help swing it one way or the other? As a journalist, it would be fascinating. As a Democrat, it would be horrific. The one primary, overwhelming concern I have in this primary is that we not be at each other's throats. The one overall, overarching concern, far more important to me than whether Senator Barack Obama or Senator Hillary Clinton win the Democratic nomination. The overarching concern is that we all come together and support that nominee. Because whether it is McCain or Romney, to have another Scalia on the Supreme Court would send our country back decades. To have another 100 years of troops in Iraq would be so much money, so much treasure, so many lives. It would destroy the American economy. It ruins our image around the world. Both Obama and Clinton understand it is time to come home. Now, Obama gets credit for understanding that a little bit earlier than Hillary Clinton, but they both understand it now, and I think they would both keep that promise. Whether it's universal health care, which both of them have a plan to move us toward, whether it is understanding that we can't live forever in debt, that we must have a repeal of the Bush tax cuts because they favor the super wealthy. Both Obama and Hillary Clinton understand that an economy is not made by a bunch of super rich CEOs running their country and their companies into the ground and then taking hundreds of millions of dollars in golden parachutes. Both Obama and Clinton understand that the middle class and the lower middle class, frankly, are the engines of the economy. And along with Edwards' support and reminder about the poor, I think they will be out for the 80, 90, 95% of Americans that truly make our economy move. It's an argument I've had for years with Republicans. They seem to think that when you pay a CEO hundreds of millions of dollars, a few hundred million more dollars, that suddenly he'll build a factory. But we know it's not true. You don't have to buy it on faith. Just look at the evidence. CEOs making hundreds of millions of dollars are continuing to run their companies into the ground, whether it be Countrywide today or Disney a few years back or Enron a few years before that. No, it is the middle America, the ones who actually need the money, the ones to whom $10,000 has meaning and can affect whether or not they buy a second car or send their kids to college. It is they who can use the money, whereas the multi-billionaire, frankly, it's just another zero in their bank book. I'm confident that both Senator Clinton and Senator Obama understand that. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about where they agree and where they differ. And in the conclusion, I promise I will give you my endorsement for President of the United States. If you want to call in and make your last chance to influence me, please, please don't hesitate to do so. Toll-free number is 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
This is the Head-On Radio Network, The Horn.
Now I lay me down to sleep.
I pray thee, Lord, my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake.
Across Appalachia, children pray at night. Coal companies are destroying Appalachia with 3 million pounds of high explosives per day. Take a stand. Go to crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch. Be part of the solution so you and they can sleep at night. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net.
The trains are rolling by and I can feel the ground rumbling.
Everybody comes to Rick's.
If you can stand it, I can. Play it.
Howdy, Rangers. Tune into Rick's Place. You'll be fascinated with horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner's take on all of today's political issues. from a real Texan's liberal point of view. So mosey on into Rick's place for some good old hospitality with Rick Goodner. See you there, Rangers, this Saturday right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
And if you want another kind of love,
miss Rick's Place with Rick Goodner, part of the weekend lineup on The Horn, running all weekend in rotation with The Showers Report and Night Sounds.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It was not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing, it's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. One of the interesting things about the difference between the support for Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama is the age difference. I hope you didn't think I was going to say the gender or the race differences. I understand identity politics. I'm still noticed that many women vote for Obama and many African Americans vote for Clinton. Yes. There is identity politics. That's not where I want to go. What I want to talk about is the age difference. If you look at voters, the younger they are, the much more overwhelmingly they're going to support Obama. The older they are, the more they're going to support Clinton. Maybe because I'm, dare I say, middle-aged, ooh, I hate that word, that maybe that's why I have so much difficulty. If I were 18, I no doubt would be swept up by Obama, as I was swept up by Gary Hart and his new ideas back in 1984. In 1992, I remember tears in my eyes when Bill Clinton was elected president of the United States. Bill Clinton, I have to say, has got the best campaign theme song ever in American history. Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow. For me, I remember, I think it was in the depths of the so-called Bush re-election of 04, assuming he did win Ohio, an assumption I'll never completely make. But I remember hearing the song Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow sometime in November 04, and tears went to my eyes again. Not happy tears, but bitter tears. Bill Clinton told us in 1992 never to stop thinking about tomorrow. He was the man from hope. He was the man from Hope, Arkansas, indeed. But he played that to its hilt. And to me, that song, Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow, thinking about the future, it will soon be here. It'll be here better than before. Yesterday's gone. God, that really pet me up. It still does. It still does. And partly, I think, it's the time. I was 26 years old in 1992, and, well, I couldn't stop thinking about tomorrow. To me, heck, it beats the heck out of Happy Days Are Here Again. Sorry, FDR, but I wasn't around during that time. Today, I see that starry-eyed look in Barack Obama's supporters. They never stop thinking about tomorrow. Barack Obama preaches that he can get to things that everyone in Washington thinks is impossible done. He can both Bring in independents. Bring in decent-minded, moderate Republicans. Bring in religious folk. Bring in rural folk. And can do so without compromising his principles, but bring them on to a progressive agenda. It would indeed be miraculous if he could get something like that done. But maybe not out of the question. I mean, Ronald Reagan got Democrats on board. You've heard of the Reagan Democrats. Why not Obama Republicans? Now, in Washington, they will tell you, I will tell you, that that's practically impossible to do. They will tell you that, yes, he's new. Yes, no one hates him yet. But they will. And there's no question in my mind that the Republicans will swift vote him very quickly. Swift voting, of course, is the term used against John Kerry in 2004 when they took this national hero. Whatever you think about John Kerry's speaking skills, and I think very little of them, you cannot deny that the man is a national hero. Several Purple Hearts and Silver Crosses. He indeed risked his life to fight in Vietnam, and then risked his status and his political career as a hero even more by coming home to fight the war in Vietnam. And yet, the Republicans, Turd Blossom Karl Rove, that's the president's name for him, not mine. I have much less glamorous names for him, managed to sully this man's military heroism in favor of, indeed, someone who was absent without leave because he was too high on cocaine to attend his National Guard training, George W. Bush. So they swift-boated Kerry. Heck, they even swift-boated, although the term wasn't known then, in 2000, John McCain, accusing him of having an illegal black baby. And John McCain has adopted a daughter from Bangladesh. She is of darker hue. I guess that's what convinced the people in South Carolina to vote for George W. Bush, and to vote at that same election in 2000 for another misogynist, another man who had slept with a black woman, a 100-year-old coot named Strom Thurmond, the Dixiecrat candidate for president, a man who said segregation now and forever, a man who in the 1920s raped his 16-year-old maid. South Carolina is a funny state. But South Carolina spoke with a very different view the last week and overwhelmingly supported Barack Obama. There are lots of issues to talk about in terms of deciding which candidate or another to support. And what I do find interesting is that in the Republican race, they really are battling over some different ideas. There are differences between Romney and McCain on immigration and a few other things. The differences, I must say, between Clinton and Obama on issues are small. And that's no insult to either of them. Indeed, it is praise. They largely come together as one, and I largely endorse their coming together. It is always worthwhile to point out what both Clinton and Obama, and frankly Edwards too, believed in. Getting our troops home from Iraq. But doing so in a smart way. Not, you know, cutting and running, not turning them all around, withdrawing them in a principled, responsible way. Frankly, it may take more than a year to do so, and I understand that. I understand that. And keeping some around and the peripheries and the borders and the embassies, perhaps. I get that, too. George Bush made such a mess out of Iraq that the idea that we have to be nearby, I get. But we shouldn't be involved in any combat missions anymore. If we find Al-Qaeda is building a haven in some specific place in Iraq, it's okay with me to bomb it, just like, as Barack Obama said, it'd be okay to bomb Pakistan if necessary, if there was an Al-Qaeda training camp, just as I supported bombing Afghanistan in 1998 when Bill Clinton just barely missed Osama bin Laden by a few hours. But there's a difference between singular bombs directed at known terrorists and keeping combat troops in a country. There's a difference between taking out a few terrorist leaders, which I think the world more understands, than occupying an entire nation, than trying to control its oil fields, than trying to have permanent military bases for generations. The Iraqis don't want us. The war is costing $4 billion a week. And frankly, we need that money here at home. We also need the lives. There are now more dead, just American servicemen and women, more dead in Iraq alone than died on all of September 11th. More than 3,000 in Iraq alone. That's separate from Afghanistan, a war that I largely understand and largely supported. I mean, we did it wrong. I mean, we let Osama bin Laden go at Tora Bora. But the concept of a war in self-defense, I've always supported. I support a nation's right to self-defense. Afghanistan's government, the Taliban, attacked us through al-Qaeda. Iraq never did. Iraq was a war of choice. And even that sounds weird. A war of choice? Why would anyone choose war? So both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama would bring our troops home, I'm confident, and would do so in a responsible way, and that would save us money, and that would save us lives, and that would save us respect around the globe. So where do they differ in this respect? Well, Obama was opposed to the war from the start. Hillary Clinton voted for George Bush's the bill proposed by the Republicans to authorize the war. So one point to Obama. I must say, though, that it's not a huge point for me, partly because Barack Obama wasn't sitting in the Senate. He said in 2004 that if he were, he wasn't sure how he would vote. He was in the Illinois State Legislature. It was a little easier to oppose the war then, just as Al Gore, to his credit, came out in opposition to the war early on. Hillary Clinton faced a more difficult choice because she was only given an up or down vote by a Republican Congress. And frankly, there was an amendment at the time, I believe it was the Reed Levin Amendment, that would have made George Bush come back a second time if he wanted to declare war on Iraq. That one she voted the right way on. That one was voted down. So she was given a choice. And the choice was to vote for the possibility of the use of force, to authorize use of force, in order to get inspectors on the ground in Iraq. At that time, the pretty much new president, George Bush, he'd only been in office about a year or so, said, I'm not going to force as a first resort, I'm going to use force as a last resort. So in hindsight, should Hillary Clinton have known that George Bush was lying to her? Maybe. Maybe she should. As I said, I give the point to Obama. But I do understand her vote. I do. I understand how if I had a president I could trust, if that were Bill Clinton in the Oval Office, or frankly Hillary Clinton, or Barack Obama, or John Edwards, I would have voted to authorize those presidents to use force because I would have known they wouldn't have done it on a whim. They wouldn't have done it for oil. They would have used it as a threat to get the inspectors in, and when the inspectors found nothing, there would have been no war. So I give Obama a point, but not a big point, on the issue of Iraq. I will talk about domestic policies when I come back. If you want to call in, toll free, 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. This is what happens when the Democrats don't press the case for impeachment. Bush keeps on committing crimes against our Constitution. His latest came in a signing statement this week on the National Defense Authorization Act. That act explicitly bars funding for permanent military bases in Iraq. When the act landed on Bush's desk, he had only two choices under our system, as any fifth grader knows. He could sign the bill and see that it's faithfully executed, or he could veto the bill. But Bush, as he's done a thousand times before, made a third choice. He signed the bill into law, but then appended an asterisk to his signature by issuing what he calls a signing statement. And in that signing statement, he said the provision about the military bases could inhibit the president's ability to carry out his constitutional obligations. But by issuing the signing statement, he's already reneged on his constitutional obligations. This guy's out of control, and Congress must stop him. But on the same day Bush issued this signing statement, Dennis Kucinich, of all people, held back on introducing his impeach Bush resolution. Now's not the time for Kucinich, or for any other representative who cares about our Constitution, to hold anything back. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Don't touch that mouse. Strictly Confidential is LGBT radio. 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Many colors in the homo rainbow. Don't be afraid to let your color shine. Many colors in the homo rainbow. Show me yours, I'm gonna show you mine.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. So, Clinton or Obama? Obama or Clinton? Who will I pull the lever for on February 12th? Who do I think my listeners should pull the lever for? I've already said I like them both. I've already said that I think either would make a terrific president. I've already said how both of them are leagues above any of the Republicans running. And I've already said how important it is that we not let the heated campaign, as you expect in any close race between these two, in any way divide us, in any way divide our party. And let me stay right here and right now that I want to see a ticket with both of them. This choice was hard for me for a reason. And so whether it be Clinton Obama or Obama Clinton, and I think it's fair to say that if Hillary Clinton is chosen, there's actually, I think, a decent chance she'll choose Barack Obama as vice president. I think there's less of a chance that Barack Obama is chosen that he will choose Hillary Clinton as vice president. But whoever is our nominee, I do hope they choose the other one for vice president. Both of them have significant, powerful gifts. Barack Obama is the visionary. He's the one who gives the best speeches, some of the best speeches I've ever seen. Indeed, after I saw him give his speech in the 2004 Democratic nomination speech, I said at that time, those of you that remember 4 years ago, I said Obama in 2008. He is someone who does speak to lots of Americans, including Republicans and independents. He talks about no red state or blue state America, and he leaves us enraptured with his powerful oratory. Hillary Clinton, she's the pragmatician. She knows the ins and outs of bills. Every single law that has been passed, that is proposed to be passed, that could be passed, every single idea, she's thought about it, and she's got an idea for it. She's the ultimate policy wonk, if you will, someone who knows from day one exactly what she's going to do, and specifically the details of how she's going to accomplish it. I've often mentioned that I learned at Yale Law School that while Bill Clinton was third in his class, Hillary Rodham was number one. In other words, Clinton's brilliant, and Hillary Rodham is slightly more brilliant. That's no knock on Barack Obama, Harvard Law School grad, although, heck, I'm a Yalie, so maybe there's a slight knock there. But they're all very, very smart. What Hillary Clinton brings to the table, I think, is someone who has thought through these issues very carefully and has thought through not just how to achieve them, but the politics as well. Indeed, if she's the ultimate wonkish detailed person, her husband, Bill Clinton, is, or at least was before recently, the ultimate politician. A couple that frankly sometimes knows how to play dirty when they need to. One of the things that has most upset people in the Democratic Party, and has upset me as well, is that the Clintons' tactics against Barack Obama. And yet, you got to give them their due. Perhaps the reason that Gore and Kerry did not achieve as much is because they weren't willing to get down and dirty like the Clintons are. Maybe Al Gore, in hindsight, definitely Al Gore, should have led street protests in 2000. But he wasn't willing to go to that level. Maybe we need a president who will. Will Obama be naive? Will he be too naive to understand that you have to fight dirty sometimes with the Republicans, that that's how they fight with us? Getting back to the issues, as I said, Iraq, there's a plus for Obama, a slight plus for the fact that he's been opposing it all along, and an even bigger plus for the idea that Barack Obama, I think, would do an amazing thing worldwide. We have got to regain America's stature in the world. After George Bush and our unprovoked war in Iraq, the entire world is scared of us. They hate us. They fear us. Far more people in the world fear us than fear Al-Qaeda or Islamic terrorism or any kind of terrorism for that matter. And we've got to change that. And I think both Clinton and Obama would do leagues for changing that. I actually think Barack Obama, due not so much to his oratory, although partly it's that, but frankly, partly due to the color of his skin, would probably make America a little more loved in the third world. To see a partly African-American man stand up as president of the world, president of the United States, the most powerful man in the world, I think would do a lot of good into repairing where we were in the world. To slightly, slowly, importantly, getting us back to where we were before George W. Bush took office. So I'm going to give Obama the point on that, too. But now when we go to domestic policy, I need to start giving Hillary Clinton some points. Let's talk about the health care proposals they both have. Obama's proposal, I think, is naive. He wants to move toward universal coverage by saying that everyone would have a right to get coverage, but no adult would be required to. He would allow people to buy health care with the government providing them a certain, you know, low enough rate for everyone, even those with pre-existing conditions, to get care. But he wouldn't require it. He says adults, if they don't want health care, that's their choice. Hillary Clinton's plan, like John Edwards' plan, would require everyone to have health care. No ifs, ands, or buts. It's not a single-payer system, the system that I prefer. The system that, interestingly, both Clinton and Obama said they would prefer if they were starting over with a new system, the system that Dennis Kucinich endorsed. I do think they both move us in that direction. Hillary Clinton would move us farther towards single-payer. She understands that there's a problem with telling someone they don't have to pay for health care, and then what happens if they get sick? Well, we still have to give them emergency room care. Even someone who's stupid needs to have that care. And then what do you do? Well, Barack Obama would have them pay a fine. But most people who choose not to buy health care don't have the money to pay that fine. I think Hillary Clinton has thought through her health care plan far more than Barack Obama, partly because of the failures of the early 90s. She's thought it through. It's a better plan. 1 point, Hillary Clinton. Now let's move on to energy. Both of them support greening America. Both of them support getting us away from fossil fuels and oil. But if you look at their votes on this issue, well, one of them has made a better vote. And that point again goes to Hillary Clinton. Barack Obama, to my astonishment, voted for the energy bill, the Republican energy bill, not the recent one, the Democratic energy bill. They both voted for that. That was pretty much a good bill. Didn't go as far as it needed to, but it increased CAFE standards, did a lot of good things. He voted for the Republican bill that gave hundreds of millions of dollars, indeed billions of dollars, in corporate welfare to Exxon and Mobil. Now, Barack Obama has explained his vote by saying that the bill also provided, which it did, money for alternative energy, for solar and nuclear and the like. But Hillary Clinton, I think, better understood that this was mostly a bailout bill to the oil companies. that if you give more money to oil companies than you do to solar and wind power, then frankly it'd be better to give nothing at all. It's not only a huge debt, but it doesn't change the incentives. We have to increase solar and wind power, and giving them a little money, and the oil companies a lot of money, doesn't make any sense. Another point for Hillary Clinton. Where else do they differ? They differed slightly on the bankruptcy bill. Now, both of them opposed it, the horrible bankruptcy bill that the Republicans passed in 05 that finally came to the floor. That was a really nasty bill that makes consumers have to pay when they really are at no fault of their own. Most people who declare bankruptcy today are not doing so because they bought a Porsche. They're doing so because they lost their jobs, because interest rates went up on their mortgage, or above all, it's because they can't afford health care. And to punish people like that while rewarding the credit card companies that are charging them 18 or 20% makes no sense to me. Indeed, that's one of the things I didn't like about John Edwards. He voted for that bankruptcy bill. Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama voted against it in 05. Hillary Clinton did vote for an earlier draft of it in committee in 01, has stated that she's glad that it failed, that earlier bill. So, small point then for Obama. As you can see on issue after issue, whether it's education or the environment, it's hard to find the differences between the candidates. Both of them support civil rights. Both of them support equal rights for gay people, except for the case of marriage. It seems to be that no politician who has a chance of winning can say they support equal rights for marriage. Kucinich supported it. And to his everlasting credit, my favorite politician, the one, by the way, who last year I endorsed in favor of him rather than Obama or Clinton, Al Gore, just came out saying that gay people deserve equal rights. Let me say this about that. I think both Obama and Clinton believe that gay people deserve full and equal rights. I think both of them believe politically that America is not ready for full equality. I understand it. I don't like it. I'm going to call them on it. But in all other ways, whether it's ending Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military, whether it's equal rights in the workplace, whether it's a hate crimes bill, I think they're both good people. Sure, I wish they both go farther, but there's no light between them on that one. On the economy, I think both of them understand that the mortgage crisis is severe. Both of them understand the basics of monetary and fiscal policy. Both of them are far more fiscally conservative than the Republicans. On lobbyists, Obama gets a slight point. He has been more against them than Hillary Clinton. That's a good thing. But I do think Hillary Clinton will stand her own and will do what she thinks is right, no matter what the lobbyists say. So then, if the issues between them on policy are not that different, how do you choose? Well, the New York Times editorial put forward some very persuasive reasons why they endorsed Hillary Clinton. They talk about her experience, and she does have more experience than he does. Much of it, admittedly, as First Lady, which is a strange way to get experience. But they point out that she is well-qualified, that she knows the issues, and they also point out, as I've said, that there's no real gulf separating the two. As they say, and this is a quote, they both promised to end the war in Iraq, more equitable taxation, more effective government spending, more concern for social issues, a restoration of civil liberties, and an end to the politics of division of George W. Bush and Karl Rove. So they do think, though, that Hillary Clinton has already proven herself and that Barack Obama has yet to prove himself. She is the safer choice. And when you're going for president of the United States, why take a risk on someone that we still don't know very well who sounds good like Barack Obama? I posed that question to a cousin of mine, one who is younger than I and a strong supporter of Barack Obama. And she said, Mark, I guess you just need a leap of faith. And I said, well, if it takes a leap of faith, I'm not so sure I can take that leap, and I'm not so sure I trust in faith. But she told me that she thought that Barack Obama could do it, could do the impossible, could actually reach out to moderates and independents and at the same time push them in a progressive direction. I reminded her about his quote about Ronald Reagan, and she didn't have to give me the response. The response came, I guess, just yesterday and the day before, when none other than the lion of the Democratic Party, Ted Kennedy, and Caroline Kennedy, endorsed Barack Obama. It is hard to believe that the Kennedys would endorse someone who would give up important victories to the Republican Party. So can Obama do it? Can Obama do it? Can he transform the country the way Reagan did, but in a good direction? Can there be Obama Republicans? As I've said, they're going to swift boat him. We know that by November, they are going to use his middle name, Hussein. They're going to call him everything but a terrorist. They're going to talk about a guy that you probably don't know about, but you'll know very well by the end of this campaign season if he's the nominee, a man by the name of Rezko, an indicted felon to whom Obama bought some property next to his house for cheap. I think Obama's Rezko is the Clinton's whitewater. In other words, not where he's done anything wrong, but it looks bad, and it's just enough to tie the Republicans up in knots for generations to come. Would America vote for a black man, or a half-black man in Obama's case, a man raised by a Muslim stepfather? Would they do that? Heck, would they vote for a woman, Hillary Clinton? Would they vote for a woman who, after all, is there, let's face it, because of her husband? Is it fair when we have a two-term limit in the Constitution of 8 years? Is it fair to allow her to go off her husband's coattails? If he can't run again, why can she? I think a lot of people are supporting Obama for that reason, because they think that they've had enough of the Clintons. But is that fair? Who are the ones that have had enough of the Clintons? It's largely the people that are otherwise in the Democratic Party. I mean, Bill Clinton didn't always agree with Congress, so there's no wonder that Tom Daschle and John Kerry and all of them are supporting Obama. That makes sense. They butted heads with the Clintons all along. And while I do think the media has been unfair to Bill Clinton, completely unfair to Bill Clinton, in that I don't think the things that Bill Clinton has done have been much, much worse than the things that Barack Obama has done. It is a tough campaign. Barack Obama had, you know, a surrogate, say, a Democrat from Punjab about Hillary Clinton. It was Barack Obama's surrogates that took a completely innocuous quote by Hillary Clinton about Martin Luther King and turned it into something against them. Meanwhile, the media has excoriated Clinton for saying that Jesse Jackson won the South Carolina primary. Now, it was the wrong thing to say. Bill Clinton shouldn't have said it. In saying it, he was obviously either intentionally or unintentionally, probably intentionally, reminding America that, well, in a state as African-American as South Carolina, it's no surprise they go for the South Carolinian candidate. It's something he shouldn't have said, but on the other hand, it's something the media says all the time. The media has been saying all along, look at where the white women voted, look at where the African-Americans voted. And then Bill Clinton, for half a second, in response to a reporter where he says, I'm not going to let you bait me, Bill Clinton says a similar comment, and suddenly the whole world is down on him. All the Clinton haters are out of the woodwork. Everyone from the National Review to Christopher Hitchens, who, I don't know, the guy makes me wretch. I think he's probably paid for by the right wing while he pretends to be on the left wing. All the Clinton haters came out of the woodwork. And yet, what was Clinton hate all about? Was it really about Monica Lewinsky? Is that the reason the Republicans tried to run him out of office? Heck, John F. Kennedy, the brother of the endorser of Obama, he had affairs too, and no one tried to run him out of office. No, the media is overwhelmingly anti-Clinton and pro-Obama. I've talked about this. They're overwhelmingly pro-McCain and anti-Romney. The media likes John McCain because he talks to them all the time. And they don't like the Clintons because I think the Clintons are their cohort. They're of the same generation. They're the generation of the 60s, and they kind of feel like the Clintons have had their time and it's time to pass on the stage. But is that a reason to oppose a nominee? Is that a fair reason because the media doesn't like him? I'll answer that question and give my endorsement after this 1 minute break. We'll be right back after this.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
Great universities never set out simply to reflect the communities in which they exist. Rather, they serve as seedbeds of change in an ever-changing world. They take pride in being places where truth is freely sought, where inquiry is encouraged, where new ideas and new ways can develop and flourish at the expense of the old. When a true academic community, instructors and students together, acts and expresses itself freely, without fear, all of society benefits. Concord University is already using this new set of challenges as opportunities to serve in ways that strengthen its dedication to community, its commitment to service. In graduate education, in professional services to working professionals, in highly respected fields of study where standards remain high, in continuing to place graduates in the very best professional and graduate schools in the nation, Concord University remains the very best higher education bargain in this region. Don't ever allow yourself to accept anything less. Concord University, still since 1872, an education you can put to work. For an appointment, call 1-800-344-6679.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
So it has come time for my endorsement. And I hereby endorse John Edwards for Attorney General of the United States. I endorse Wesley Clark for Secretary of Defense. I endorse the loser of the Clinton-Obama race for Vice President of the United States. But who do I endorse for President? When it comes down to policy matters, I think they are about even. I've got slight problems with both of them, but overwhelming delight with 90-plus percent of both of their agendas. So I can't decide on that. If I look and I see who's more experienced, I see it's Hillary Clinton. And if I look and see it, who's got the excitement and who's got the young people and who's the best orator, I see Obama. And I see the media that is strongly supporting Obama, and that pushes me to vote for Hillary Clinton, if only because I don't like the media telling me what to do. But that would be a mistake. The media has intense power in this country. The media is why I am doing what I am doing. The media didn't ask tough questions about George Bush in the early '00s. The media is the one that didn't try to stop Bush v. Gore. The media has a powerful voice, and we at the Head On Radio Network unfortunately do not have a powerful enough voice yet. You all can make a difference in that. We need a more powerful voice, but for the moment, the media is telling America, don't vote for Clinton. And I've talked with lots and lots of people, because the thing that I care about more than anything else is electability. We have got to have a Democratic nominee this fall. And I have talked with people who say, well, I might vote for McCain if Obama's the nominee. And I've talked with people who say, well, I might vote for McCain if Clinton's the nominee. But I've talked with more of the second group of people. There is this feeling in America, fair or unfair, and I think largely unfair, that the Clinton's time has passed. That we shouldn't have a president who gets there solely by being married to a former president. And that's not fair to Hillary. She's done a lot, both before she married Bill Clinton for the Children's Defense Fund and also as senator. But I hear that sentiment. And all the old discussions of the Clinton campaign and the 90s, people want to put behind them. There will be new problems with an Obama presidency. They will swiftboat him. But I do see the excitement. I do see people coming in. I do see independents and Republicans who are coming out of the woodwork. I see African Americans and the way they look at Obama and understand that as important as it would be to elect a woman president of the United States, given the history of sexism in this country, given the history of racism, it may be even more important to elect a black man. But that's not the reason that I am endorsing Barack Obama today. I'm endorsing Barack Obama because I am taking that leap of faith. Because I am saying that he may just be the person who can bring about Obama Republicans the way they used to be Reagan Democrats. Someone who at this point, and I'm still nervous about it, and I may still change my mind, but at this point I am convinced that he truly supports progressive principles, but understands that you have to talk to Republicans, you have to talk to independents, you have to let them have their word before making your decision. I think the Clinton haters are legion and large and very large in number and well-funded. And I have to say, at the end of the day, while I will be very, very happy to support Clinton, and even better, a Clinton-Obama ticket, should she win the nomination, I think the better choice is Barack Obama. I think that Barack Obama, just like I felt about Bill Clinton in 92, just like a generation earlier felt about Jack Kennedy in 1960, there's a reason why young people are excited. There's a reason why maybe we need to have someone other than a Bush or Clinton in office. Hillary Clinton can continue to serve her country as she does so well as senator, perhaps as vice president. But Barack Obama would truly put a new face on the world, not only, and not even primarily, because he's an African American, but because of his oratory, because of his uplifting vision, because he is someone who clearly can talk about all of America and be seen as a president of all of America. Now, the vested interests will be opposed to him from the outset. They will try to tear him down. I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that at all. But if you look just at his Teflon in the media, if you just look at the way the media treats him with kid gloves, it reminds me of, I'm sorry to say, Ronald Reagan, our last Teflon president. It seems that when you have a president with vision, the press doesn't know what to do. They could take down John Kerry. They could take down Al Gore, who I worship the man, but is not the best speaker. Bill Clinton was a terrific speaker. Hillary Clinton doesn't have that. We need that voice. Hillary Clinton should still perform an important role with policy, but I think Obama will take in and listen to people and will come to the right decisions. As I say, this is not an easy choice for me. I will happily, happily endorse Hillary Clinton should she win the Democratic nomination. But I see the hope in young people's eyes. I see the time for a change. I see a way to finally put the Confederacy behind us in America. I see a way to look at the world with a new light, with a very intelligent man, with a visionary, with someone who I think could be a tremendous president of the United States. So vote for whomever you wish. That is your choice. But I endorse Barack Obama for President of the United States. I hope you've enjoyed this hour and listening to what I went through as I made my decisions. This is Mark Levine signing off.
Every time I get near it.
This is the Head On Radio Network.